Hey guys, we're back with episode 3 of season 3 of Millennial Mirrors. On this episode, we have Saleh Mbreyk, who is the founder of the podcast Let's All Scream, which discusses topics like empathy, putting yourself first, societal expectations, and kind of everything in between. Aside from that, Saleh is also the founder of Gravity Gym and the contemporary Asian restaurant Wakame. It's been interesting talking to him, considering his journey from being an accounting major who thought he was going to go into kind of like real estate to where he's at today. So yeah, we're going to hear a bit more about his journey. And of course, on the second part of today's episode, he'll be talking to us about the topic of what do you stand for? So listen in and I hope you enjoy it. So welcome, Saleh, to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for taking the time. So we're going to be talking about what do you stand for, but this part of the episode, we're kind of just going to dive into Saleh a bit more.
Okay.
So what's the story of Saleh Mbreyk?
32-year-old Emirati. Mm-hmm. Turned 32 during Rona time. So let's go back a year. I don't think I'm going to count this year at all.
Preach.
So born and raised in Dubai. Mm-hmm. I studied most of my, you know, high school life here, right in the city. Was so thankful to even have that experience, because I was exposed to so many different cultures that when I went to study for my university bachelor's degree in the UK, it wasn't so much of a culture shock.
Yeah.
Graduated with an accounting and finance degree, believe it or not.
Wow.
Which not a lot of people know. And when people ask me why, I use the typical Arab excuse of, because my dad told me to. Like, it's just, it was something where as a 17-year-old, I wasn't exposed to different facets of the industry.
Yeah.
And so all I thought was, you know, business. Typical answer, you know, I wanted to study business. And then my dad, being an entrepreneur himself throughout his entire life, basically told me, why don't you do accounting and finance? Because it's always a good it's like a good backdrop in case you go into any,
you know, what's funny,
industry.
My dad tried to push me into doing finance as well. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to do finance. I wanted to do marketing and management. And he pushed me into doing finance. I took 2 finance classes, got 2 C's. And I was like, I can keep going if you want. But I mean, it's not looking good for you.
For me, it was the opposite. So I went in and I was good with numbers.
Yeah.
And I was getting okay grades, I would say. Graduated and I assumed that I was coming back to work for my dad. He's an entrepreneur. I was going to work for him. I graduated in 2009, which for people who know, was the worst year. The financial crisis hit. And my dad's portfolio is, some of it is based in real estate. So that was the hardest hit. So he basically looked at me and was like, well, hey, you're not coming to work with me. And I wasn't ever planning for you to work with me. And I'm like, but wait, I'm the eldest son. Like, isn't this supposed to be the protege type thing? And he goes, no, like you studied on your own. So my dad, I didn't get a scholarship. So my dad paid for the tuition, but my pocket money, for example, I had to work for it while I was in the UK.
Okay.
And so my dad's very much like, you know, he's a first generation entrepreneur. So my grandmother was a headmistress of a school and my grandfather was an accountant. Okay. So he was very much like, make something of yourself. So that mentality came with him, like even after I graduated from university. And I was like, so wait, I have to go get a job? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, no, but this doesn't go with that deeper feeling I had that I had to achieve something. How am I going to achieve something as a graduate trainee? Got a job at Dubai Aluminium. My first job, really loved it and the people that were there. But throughout the 4.5 years, it was quite a while that I spent there, I still felt there was something wrong. Like I had to be doing something different. And one thing led to the other. And I opened up my first business, which was digital agency in 2011. And then I was 23 at the time. And then...
Amazing.
And then that fell into another thing. And I just started... realizing that entrepreneurship was in my blood. So I started you know, going into another business and another business. And alhamdulillah, like from 23 to 32, I am no longer an accountant. I realized that comms, communications, PR, digital media was my calling. It was the thing that I was more passionate about. And so I work full time at Dubai Tourism in campaigns and digital management. But at the same time, I'm the proud co-owner of several businesses that fall under fitness and health, F&B, digital agency as well, etc. So very proud of myself for finding finding something that I was passionate to do. But it was something that I was very anxious about at a younger age, because I just didn't know how to get there. And my dad wasn't going to give me his tips and tricks.
Yeah.
And I had to find it on my own. And so that's how I ended up.
Amazing. Yeah. I want to know, what did you do for work when you were in the UK?
So I didn't know. So you have to look back. I was a 17-year-old. I didn't know what it was like.
There's a lot of like precursors to this story.
I was very much clueless as to how to get a job.
Okay.
You know, obviously... again, coming from this region, we're fortunate enough to have a childhood whereby we're pretty much taken care of, right? So we don't have those, like, I would say, I am not street smart at all. So I was thinking to myself, okay, how? So I went to my professor and I asked her, you know, how to do one. And she basically told me that the student union at my university gave jobs to students and had an hourly fee. And it was a rotational based. So sometimes you do, it's based on what they need.
Okay.
So I worked at student wages at the student grocery store at the university, the library.
Yeah.
And sometimes in the admin as well, when it was like add and drop week, etc., with paperwork and stuff like that. But it was, I realized from that age, I think it was very much a wake-up call to myself, because while there were others from different nationalities, but more or less from my own background, similar backgrounds, you know, they were from the Middle East. I was looking in, whilst they were in London, I was outside of London. So I was I was in Colchester. So it's, for those who know, it's literally off the beaten path.
Okay.
I had to, in order to go to my university, I had to hop on a bus. That the bus stop was actually in the middle of a cow field. I'm not lying.
Amazing.
It was really cool. It was cool.
Yeah.
And so, you know, going to London, visiting my friends who were studying there, it was just a different life completely, for sure. For anyone who's familiar, even with the city, you know, going out, and everyone was obviously had their own cars. And, and I'm back in Colchester, you know, using my student pass for free bus rides. But it humbled me, to be honest, Danny. It introduced me to a whole different side of myself that I never knew existed. And it really brought me down to the point where I needed to be brought down. My family is middle class, considering here as a UAE national. But a middle class, you know, living in the UK is still a different construct.
Yeah.
So for me, it was such a humble experience that I never regretted. And I took that learnings with me here.
I think it's always interesting, because I have friends who are on both ends of the spectrum when it came to studying abroad.
Yeah.
Like, I was given barely any pocket money. I worked in the computer labs when I was in university, in the international computer labs, because all my friends were internationals.
Mm-hmm.
So that just basically meant that I'd hang out with my friends.
And get paid for it.
Because I'd be behind the reception desk and they'd be all coming in because they needed to do their work. So that was kind of what I did. But I have friends who were, they got the car, they got all that kind of stuff. And they had that college experience, which was basically very similar to their home experience.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had friends on the other spectrum who were like, yeah, no, you need a job. You need all that kind of stuff. I was not allowed a car. My dad made it very clear, you're there to study. And I was in Richmond, Virginia. So it wasn't like London. It wasn't like a city where you can get around.
Yeah.
So if I didn't have a car, that meant I was stuck on campus. Third year, the campus instituted a university van that would take you downtown.
Okay.
Which was great. But up to then, it was, I was pretty much trapped. I had a few friends who were road tripping and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, nope, not me. I'm just on campus, going to the campus cinema.
How far is that by foot?
Right? Exactly. Right? Oh, man. We were in a valley, too. So there was no walking out. But yeah. Anyway. So you do many things at the same time. What's, like, I would say, the red thread or the one thing that connects all the things that you do?
So one thing I realized is when I had... So I grew... When I... Okay, going back to it. When I was in high school, I went to an all-boys school, mostly Emiratis, like 90% of the school. And it was a school where basically there were members of the royal family. It's a well-known school here in Dubai. And so, you know, it was different classes of UAE nationals as well. So again, talking about that pre-humble phase, I was very much realizing, okay, so these are different types of, you know, Emiratis, for example. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, there's this. I went abroad and the humble experience came. And then I realized, you know, okay, I come from Dubai. I have all these different cultures that I'm exposed to and I have all these different identities. But then when I went to the UK, I realized that there was even more that I could learn. And so immediately in my head, I thought about, okay, so these are different communities. So every place has its own community, whether it's a friend, whether it's family, whether it's just acquaintances. And so I spent about four full years in the UK before coming back to the UAE. And I can say I was a changed person. I was a changed man. I came back and immediately what I wanted when I came back was because in my university, we didn't have a lot of Emiratis per se. So I wanted to just connect with my community. I left them in high school. And so I wanted to come back to Dubai and I wanted to see them again. And I realized that in the span of 4 years, maybe it was because I was looking through these, you know, rose-colored glasses. Mm-hmm. And I came back and now I'm seeing things for the way they are in people as individuals rather than anything. And so what happened was I got my first job. I went in and my surrounding were Emiratis. And then my colleague, I found out, he was an accountant with me in my same department, but he was also inspired with music. He loved the oud. I had another friend, she loved singing. And they're all Emirati. So I thought to myself, I was like, that's actually pretty cool. And I said, you know what? The whole idea of finding your tribe or finding a community was very important to me because I felt like... no matter how different we each are, we all have something to benefit each other. We're all a community at the end of the day. If you look at it from a global perspective or even from a neighborhood perspective. So I think going back to the question, the thing that ties in everything I've ever done was the fact of community and bringing people together. When it comes to the F&B side, my brother champions this. He's the foodie.
Okay.
But... he came to me and I am a social person. So he came to me and he was like, okay, so I have this concept and I'm passionate about food and I know my food's good. I just need people to come. And you like creating communities. So I need you to get me this community. And so that's, I realized that, I don't even know if that's a skill you can write on your CV, but that's what I used to do. I had to start understanding different communities, understanding different individuals, relating. And so I just exposed myself to a lot of people. I was networking. And through this, made me passionate about the F&B business. So, you know, because that's at the end of the day, what you do is you bring communities together and share stories and share cultures. And then my best friend who champions the fitness and wellness in the gyms, he wanted to open gyms. And I just thought to myself, I was like, that's a whole, for me, I got excited. Yeah. I was like, that's a whole different community I can find and belong to and just connect with them. And it just kind of, even the digital media, the agency, the same thing. It's you meet the creatives, right? The artists and the singers. And I think that's something that just drives my passion. It's just anytime I think about any concept, I just think to myself, is this going to bring people together? And is this for the better? Community, it's something that's intangible, but it's just so meaningful for me. And that's what I like.
My conspiracy theory mind thinks you're fattening them up in your F&B concepts and then sending them to your gyms to work out. Putting them in that cycle.
I was saving that for my TED talk, but you stole my line. But you know what? It's literally, actually, I tell that to everyone. When I tell people, they're like, what are you into? And I tell them, and then before they say it, I'm just like, yes. I make you gain weight in one side, and I make you lose the weight in the other side. It's a vicious cycle, I know, but hey, someone's got to make money. At the end of the day, it's just so funny. If you ask me, my first ever concept or my first ever company that I founded was ThinkUp. So it was a homegrown digital agency, but it was also a creative agency as well. And I was 23. And it's because of my colleagues that I opened it. I didn't actually think it was a company. I started as a website. Okay. What I was doing was I was just interviewing homegrown talent. Okay. That's all. So I would, and how did that come about? Because I would Google it. I was like, okay, Dubai violinist. Mm. I wouldn't find anything on Google. Emirati chef.
Yeah.
I don't find anything. And this is, again, back in 2011.
Yeah.
So, and then obviously there were things that when I ask, you know, like if I'm looking for an Emirati chef, for example, they're like, you want a male Emirati chef? No, that's taboo. Where are you going to find one? And I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, they're there. I know.
Yeah, yeah.
And so what happened was I made business cards and I called myself a talent scout. Ooh. And so I would give it out to people and I'd be like, I want to interview you. That's all I want. Yeah. I want to create a website. I want to create a Google for homegrown talent. Doesn't have to be Emirati. I just need them to be from this region, if not the UAE. Because I was tired of, you know, going down Sheikh Zayed Road and seeing, movie stars on posters when we have talented people here that could have designed that poster, that could have featured in that poster, that could have created something beautiful for the region. So why are we just outsourcing? You know, we can just do it from crowdsourcing from home.
Yeah.
Completely and so agree. That's what happened. It started off as a website. And then a year later, or a year and a half later, a company was like, oh, I saw you interviewed this person. Can we use them for an ad? And I'm like, okay. So I would introduce them. Mm-hmm. 6 months later, then the more requests were coming. So 2 years down the line, people were actually contracting us to source homegrown creative people, whether it was it was even actually to a point where they wanted entrepreneurs. They're like, do you have a list of entrepreneurs? So we became a database.
Oh, wow.
And then our third and fourth year is where we kind of found our groove whereby we were developing campaigns for people. So we sat with the likes of Coca-Cola and these guys, like, alhamdulillah, like the team was just a bunch of 20-year-old, you know, Dubai residents, Emiratis and the like. And we were telling companies how to connect with UAE people, which was the beautiful part. And then again, that's how the community thing went into that. So I completely agree with what you said.
So out of all the things you've done, what gives you the most fulfillment?
Out of everything, I think the main thing is, I know I have, as an entrepreneur, I know I have, each company is like my child. So, because I made them, I saw when they were literally empty and we had to literally, even in the gym, we had to literally fix the equipment ourselves. But I think the most fulfillment I get is actually my day job.
Okay.
I know it sounds weird, but for me, so my job in Dubai Tourism is, and the only reason why, so, you know, maybe people are asking, okay, so he has businesses, why work a full-time job?
Mm-hmm.
I was called for the fact of my community focus. So the CEO of Dubai Tourism, Sam Kadam, called and he was basically, you know, he was like, so you're the ThinkUp guy. That's what I used to be called before the other entities came. And so he's like, you're this guy. And I'm like, yeah. He goes, I think I have something for you that you'd be interested. And my job at the moment is I lead a department. I report to a director, but I lead a team of 10 young UAE residents, Emiratis, Bahrainis, a mix. And our entire mandate as a department is we look for content creators globally to showcase our home. And I'm so proud of the community as an Arab, not just as a Dubai resident, but as an Arab, that my job specifically goes to addressing misconceptions in this region through content creators from global markets. So I have worked with YouTubers mm-hmm. and people on Instagram. Sometimes even we celebrities. A content creator can be anyone that yeah. has a phone, basically. So we journalists, and our main role is how do we amplify our message of who we are as an Arab society? Because Sheikh Mohammed, his vision has never been just a Dubai vision. He does things for the, you know, even the Hope Mars mission. It mm-hmm. was for the Arab world. Very much, it's that's it has. We have a synergy in our team whereby we're here representing us as a community. And so if my job, I actually tell people, if my job going every day is to be an ambassador for my home and for my society, for my community, it's the best job ever. It's difficult. It's tricky. You can sometimes get into a bit of a sticky situation yeah. because people, you know, ask everything under the sun and have all types of viewpoints about mm-hmm. this region and about this place. Having that light switch on.
What's the hardest misconception, you think? What's the hardest misconception to fix?
I think one of the main things is they believe that, or when I say they, I would say those who perhaps have the most questions about the region, is that they say that the region this specific place has no soul.
Mm.
That hits me the most, because I'm just like, but I was like, but every human has a soul. But they're like, no. And being devil's advocate, what people see on traditional media right now mm-hmm. is like the Hope Mars mission, the Burj Khalifa, the billion-dollar oil industry, the PR stunts yeah. that go global. We end up, some of the, you know, the GCC countries end up buying companies from abroad. So they see, oh, that's all they see, is they yeah. see the superficial side, the artificial side. So when I get questioned and they say that one thing where they say, but you guys have no soul, that's the main thing that gets to me. And that's actually the trickiest, because in their mind, it's similar to all of us when we get programmed with things while we grow up. And we hear things, whether it's traditional media, whether it's movies, or whether how they perceive Arabs, yeah, for example, yeah. in the media world. Yeah. It's very hard to change that mindset, because their mind's already done. They're just yeah. here to debate. They're not here to change their minds. So I've had people that I've hosted myself that maybe didn't leave with a different perspective. Mm-hmm. But I think that's the most thing that's the trickiest for us to do, and that I try to teach my team how to answer, what to answer. But honestly, just to be very honest in their approach, because obviously if you're familiar with the region, very much has a soul.
Okay. Looking at your life now, how is it different than what you expected?
Growing up, I thought to myself, I would be, my dad's retired now. Mm-hmm. He's 62.
Mm-hmm.
I assumed I was going to sit on his seat. I actually thought
yeah.
I was going to sit on his seat and be in real estate. Mm-hmm. Surprise, I still know nothing about real estate. And I'm 32. But I thought that, this is my path, and this is where I'm going, and that's where I'm going to be, and that's the type of person I thought I was expected to be. But definitely derailed. My brother, who is he's the second one. I'm the eldest, and so he's surprisingly now heading that.
Okay.
So he took the position of my dad, and after seeing how stressed he is, I am so glad it didn't play out the way that I wanted it to be. But yeah, definitely it took a different turn, but for the best, alhamdulillah.
Alhamdulillah. And so our topic for this episode is, what do you stand for? And whenever I bring a guest on for an episode, I get asked, why'd you bring this guest, or what makes them qualified to speak about the topic? And rather than answer on behalf of the guest, I'm like, why do you think you can speak on the topic of what do you stand for?
I think from my experience, specifically coming from this region, growing up in Dubai, being exposed to a lot of different cultures, going outside, going through that humble experience, coming back, creating things from scratch, you know, finding myself in the process and then getting to a point of where I am today. It definitely wasn't easy, but I know I have something to say. I know that after 32 years, I definitely have earned my place in today's society. And so you can't help but not stand for something after going through, you know, turbulations and the struggles that you go through in different aspects of your life. So, so yes, I definitely think whether it's my career background or whether it's just even on a personal background coming from here, that I think that I do deserve to stand for something, and I do.
Okay, great. Well, we're going to end the episode there.
Okay.
Thank you so much for joining me.
No, thank
we're,
you.
Of course, going to continue to do the second part. So thanks for everyone for listening. You guys can find all the links on where to find out more about Saleh in the episode description. You can also hear the rest of our discussion about what you stand for on Wednesday. So make sure you're subscribed wherever you are listening, if you're not already, so not to miss anything. As always, I love your comments, messages, suggestions, everything. Keep it coming. And this is Mishai Onaizi signing out. Bye, guys.